Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the We Are Podcast on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. I want to start with an apology. I've not had the podcast the past couple of weeks, and I hate doing that, especially heading into the draft, spring ball, and all that stuff. But I just really could not talk. I had a really bad kind of cold, might have been the flu, and then that turned into a bad cough, and I lost my voice and just kind of felt like death for a good week or so. So I apologize for not doing the podcast, kind of miss out on a lot of stuff. And I heard from a number of people, you know, saying get better. But I know a lot of people look forward to the podcast during the winter. And you can get Penn State news a lot of places. But one thing I do hear from people, and I'm very, very appreciative of it. Seriously, I mean this with everything I can say, is that people appreciate that I don't mess around. I don't have any BS. I'm going to tell you like it is. Tell it like it is. They like the podcast for that reason. And I'm not just going to sugarcoat things or blow smoke up your butt about, you know, all these positive aspects. If things need to be said, they need to be said. And so I'm going to start there with the podcast this week. We've got a great discussion, by the way, nearly a 30-minute football discussion. All kinds of aspects, a lot of draft, but some other things. Joe Smeltzer from Nittany Sports Now. You're definitely going to want to stick around for that here in a few minutes. We have just a tremendous discussion. Now, we recorded it on Friday, so it's after the first day of the NFL draft and heading into the weekend. So a couple of the things will be a little bit dated as we talk about where guys will get drafted, that sort of thing. But great conversation, so you're going to want to make sure to listen to that. As I record this on late Saturday night after the draft, and again, I mentioned not everything is positive news. So the Kalen King situation, slipping all the way to the third pick from the bottom, 255 out of 257, that's some big news out of the draft and very disappointing. You hate to see it for the young man. You never want to wish anything bad on somebody. But the reality is Kalen King made a bad decision. You know, Kalen King made a bad decision turning pro early. He didn't have a good year. I don't know who he was listening to or what he was hearing. And I wish things would have worked out better for the young man, but he just did not have, obviously, a good pre-draft situation, the Senior Bowl or combine or anything like that. And I don't want to pile on. I've got a story at DK Pittsburgh Sports explaining some things. The one thing I'm going to say is this. And again, I wish the young man the best. He got drafted. He's going to a good team in the Packers. He's going to have a shot. And I hope he plays in the NFL for a long time. What I will say about kind of the last thing about Kalen King is that I just don't think he was very good. I'm not sure he was anywhere near as good as anybody ever thought. Well, he did have the great 2022 season, Geiger. What are you talking about? Well, there are a lot of things going on in 2022. Nobody wanted to throw the ball at Joey Porter Jr., so they threw the ball the other side of the field And Kalen King, you know, he knew the ball was coming there. He had help with the safeties. The defensive line got pressure. Quarterbacks, you know, had to make tough decisions. And Kalen King was there to make plays against wide receiver two. And there's a gigantic difference for a lot of college programs between wide receiver one and wide receiver two. When he had to cover wide receiver one in 2023, he just was not the same player. He clearly wasn't the same player against Marvin Harrison. So, hey, but good luck to the guy. We all know his story by now. I just can't, you know, get past the feeling that, you know, that he made a mistake. But 8 Penn State players drafted. Congratulations to those guys, including Kalen King, who was drafted. But Olu goes in the first round, number 11 overall. Chop goes number 21 overall. They land in good situations. Third round, Caden Wallace. How about that? Caden Wallace. You know, a couple years ago, people thought he had first, second round potential. Then he's getting benched because he was so inconsistent. But he came back his final year, played very well. So he goes third round. Adisa Isaac slipped a little bit further than some people thought. He went 93rd overall. Fourth round, Theo Johnson, very good all-around tight end. Fifth round, my sleeper pick, Hunter Norzad. I think he's going to be a good NFL offensive lineman. Just a real smart guy, versatile, can play center, can play guard. Sixth round, Daquan Hardy, man, you got to feel great for Daquan Hardy. Just a good, solid football player, never a star, never a guy that everybody pointed out at Penn State like they did Joey Porter, Kalen King, or even Johnny Dixon. Say, hey, this guy, look at him. You know, it took special teams plays for Daquan Hardy to really make his mark. So congratulations to him. Seventh round, again, Kalen King at 255. Curtis Jacobs was not drafted. Now, that's a surprise to a lot of Penn State fans, and it is disappointing for Curtis Jacobs, and I'm sure very, very frustrating for him. My honest opinion about Curtis Jacobs, and I've said this really for a while, I thought he was a pretty average college linebacker. I know a lot of Penn State media really liked him, really spoke well of him, talked highly, or wrote highly of him. He was a good dude, good to the media, good team leader, good spokesman. I think sometimes people in the media let some of that sway their opinion about a guy as a football player. And yeah, Curtis Jacobs was a great dude. I always thought he was a pretty average college linebacker. So I'm not terribly surprised he didn't get drafted. He's a good football player, and he'll have a shot, and he can make a, you can make your mark in the NFL as an undrafted free agent. Absolutely. But I never really kind of bought into a lot of the Penn State media saying, oh, look out for Curtis Jacobs, maybe third or fourth round. I just never saw that. And then Johnny Dixon didn't get drafted. There were 10 guys hopeful to get drafted. He did not. And as of late Saturday night, I haven't seen that he signed anywhere as an undrafted free agent. Jacob signed with the Chiefs, Keaton Ellis with the Titans. So we'll keep tabs on where some of these guys end up as undrafted free agents. Great draft for Penn State, though. 8 guys. The one thing that Penn State does well, that James Franklin and his staff do well, they develop guys in college and prepare them for the pros. And so good luck to all those young men. Very exciting time in their lives. Some went higher than expected, such as a Caden Wallace. Some went lower than expected. But again, they all have opportunities now. No matter what, going into the draft, no matter what anybody says about you, Olu might be a great player. Olu might stink. Kalen King might stink. Kalen King may turn into a great player. The greatest football player of all time was drafted in the 6th round and went on to win 7 Super Bowls. So there's no rhyme or reason sometimes, no exact science with the draft. But good luck to all those guys. Now that all this process is behind them, they just got to go play football. Now, again, we have a tremendous discussion coming up here in a couple minutes. Joe Smeltzer from Nittany Sports Now. Be sure to stick around for it. Lots and lots of great topics on hand. For Olu Fashanu,
going number 11 overall. Not so sure it's great news going to the Jets, but a lot of notoriety there with Aaron Rodgers. Chop Robinson going 21st to the Dolphins. Joe Smeltzer joins us now from Nittany Sports. Now, I thought both those guys went a couple spots at least higher than I thought they would, Joe. I mean, everybody thought Olu could be a top 10 guy, and I think he's a top 10 guy, but when you have five quarterbacks taken in the top 10. So you at all surprised, we'll start with Olu, you at all surprised that he went 11, or did you think he might slide a few more spots?
I'm not really too surprised one way or the other, Corey, I don't think, and thanks for having me on as always. But yeah, Olu was the guy. I thought he could have gone as high as 7th overall to the Titans. Obviously, that didn't end up happening. I think we all knew that Joe Alt was going to be the first offensive lineman taken off the board, and that's exactly what happened. But there was talk, obviously, leading up to the draft that because of what you mentioned with all the quarterbacks going high and because of this being really a pretty darn good offensive line class, too, tackles included, there was a chance that there was talk around Pittsburgh even that not only could Olu Fashanu be available potentially at number 20 for the Steelers, but the Steelers might not even have taken him at 20 because of just the depth at that tackle position. But as far as the Jets go, obviously Aaron Rodgers isn't a young man as far as professional athletes go, and they need people to protect him. And Olu's obviously pretty good at doing that, given that in 700 whatever snaps he had in college, he only allowed one sack. So I think it makes sense that he went at 11, and I think it makes sense that the team that took Olu decided to do it. Chop Robinson's the guy that surprised me a little more. I think he went slightly higher at 21. I thought he might have been in the range of the last five picks of the draft. But the highest I could have seen him going was 19 to the Rams. The Rams flew in to State College to meet with Chop. They ended up taking another edge instead. But yeah, overall, I don't think, I think maybe some slight surprise, but nothing overly shocking. We knew both of those guys were going to go in the first round, and that's what ended up happening. So
I want to get your confidence level on both of those guys. Now, let me just say this from a discussion standpoint. I think Olu's going to be tremendous. Me personally, I think he's going to be a 10-year starter. I think he's going to be a first, second team, all pro kind of guy. He not only does he have everything you need physically, I believe, the mental aspect, the intelligence, all of those things. I think he'll figure it out. So my personal feeling is that he is going to be a tremendous pro. However, for the sake of discussion, you see this about the small hands. You see some reports about he wasn't great against run protection in college. My biggest concern with Olu, even though he played, was a starter for 2 years. The first year in 22, he got hurt and he missed the end of the season. And then the second year, he was good against just about everybody except for Ohio State. I just wonder, now again, let me make sure everybody understands. I think he's going to be a star in the NFL, but if I had a concern, it would be, how much was he challenged in college? How much did we really get to know if Olu is that great? Because he didn't look good at all against Ohio State, really. He looked good against everybody else. So you see what I'm getting at, Joe? What's your level of confidence either way there?
Yeah, Corey, first to address the last part of that statement, this kind of ties back to what I think, at least from a public perception standpoint, has been maybe the biggest problem with Penn State football over the past few seasons, is that every week they've played either a team that they're two touchdowns better than at least, or a national powerhouse, meaning Ohio State and Michigan. There's been no in between. And how that applies to Olu Fashanu, and really anybody you talk about on that team, is that, okay, if the teams you're playing aren't very good, how good are the individual players on those teams and the guys you have to go against, and how much can you prove going against those guys? So I think that's the concern. I think that part is really not Olu Fashanu's fault. You know, you play who you play. But what's more concerning is probably his run blocking, I think, is generally believed to be the biggest weakness in Olufashinu's game. But I think, I don't know, it's definitely an important part, don't get me wrong, but as we saw within the first 12 picks, this is a quarterback-heavy league, and this is a league that relies on passing much more than, obviously, Penn State does in the Big Ten, or most teams do in the Big Ten. But, yeah, I think whatever concerns Oler has, people need to have perspective that as much as he feels like a college football veteran, right, he was there 4 years, he had a chance to go to the NFL and be a first-round pick and pass that up to stay at Penn State, he's still only 21 years old. He got to college very early, and it's easy to kind of forget about that because of how intelligent he is and because of how long really he played in college football in an era where many guys play 3 years and then go to the NFL. It's kind of easy to forget how young he is. So I think whatever shortcomings Oler has, he'll have time to work him out even more so than some rookies because he's only 21 years old. And yeah, the point about who he went up against in the Big Ten, that's fair. In his probably biggest test of the season, going against JT Tuimoloau. I still don't know how to say that guy's
JT's his name.
Yeah. But he didn't play very well against Ohio State, and I think he'd admit that. But yeah, I agree with you overall. I think this man is on his way to an excellent pro football career.
All right, let's go off on a tangent a little bit. We'll get back to the draft in a second and Chop Robinson, because Joe astutely brought up really one of the great topics about Penn State football, and that is every single thing we judge Penn State on comes down to Ohio State and Michigan. And that includes Olu and draft guys. That includes James Franklin. It's everything. So, I mean, we could beat this discussion to a pulp, because no matter what you want to talk about, and you are absolutely correct, no matter what you want to say, if you're a 10-2 program and you're a 10-2 program all the time and you prove yourself against everybody, but you lose the biggest games, it's like, how do we judge Penn State football in any way, shape, or form, in any capacity? How do we judge a program that is right there, but can't push the door in, and everybody knows what they need to do to push the door in, and they just can't do it?
That's an excellent question. I don't know, as far as the past 2 years, if we really have a good answer, because it's hard. It's just, what do you prove by beating Indiana? What do you prove by beating Maryland? Not really a whole lot. So there's ways to judge it without looking at the schedule. I think proponents of James Franklin and Penn State can look at last night, for example, and say, hey, we got had two first round draft picks in 2021. And obviously Micah Parsons, Saquon Barkley, what those guys have done in the NFL, Chris Godwin, you can look at that and say, okay, these teams have really been pretty good football teams at Penn State. But I think, Corey, this part of the Penn State football debate, how good really is this team when they don't have many chances to prove themselves against teams that aren't the very best in college football, we're going to find out a lot more this season, because this is a year where you're going to get Penn State playing teams in that middle ground, I guess, between Indiana and Michigan and Ohio State. You're going to play at Wisconsin. Even week one, you're going to play at West Virginia. You're going to play at, we'll see how good Purdue is, but you're going to be at Purdue. You're going to be, maybe Minnesota puts a good team together. You got UCLA, USC, and Washington all coming in. They have USC. They have all three of those teams this year, as a matter of fact. So yeah, there's definitely going to be a lot of chances for Penn State to play teams that they should beat, but it isn't an absolute guarantee. And the games are actually worth watching for people that aren't fans of either team. So yeah, it's really hard to judge based on 2022 and 23, but I think this season, with the expansion of the Big Ten and with Penn State playing at Wisconsin, that could be a very big game in November at Camp Randall. I think this year we're going to find out a lot more about Penn State and where this program is than maybe we found out in any of the previous two seasons.
Well, I'm gonna write about this in a few days at DK Pittsburgh Sports. I don't want to give too much away here on the interview, but this comes back to something James Franklin said last week. I want to make sure we get over the hump. The reality is that's exactly what we need to do. Everybody knows it. It's obvious the teams we need to beat. And here's the key, folks. Listen. But I would also say that 99% of the college football programs in the country would die to be where we're at.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not 99%, and that's the discussion we're having. It's not 99%. There are 130 or so FBS programs. And then where it gets fun, and again, we don't have to do this right now, Joe, but where it gets fun is how many teams would not trade with Penn State. Georgia wouldn't trade with Penn State, nor would Alabama, nor would LSU, nor would Oklahoma, probably Clemson, USC, Oregon. There are anywhere between 8 and 14 teams that wouldn't. So it's not 99%. But the reality is it's 92-93%. 92-93% probably would trade places with Penn State in a heartbeat. That's what James is getting at. But James also lives in a world and in a bubble. Oh, he knows damn well that 10-2 to his fan base is not good enough.
Yep. Absolutely. And this goes back to another thing that's kind of been discussed a lot. I think you and I discussed it on this show before, is that I think the cynical, at best, delusional, at worst version of Penn State fans kind of make it seem like they believe that before James Franklin got here and when Joe Paterno was there for his last 20 years, Penn State was winning a national championship every 4 years, just basically at the level where Alabama and Georgia are today. And that wasn't the case. Joe Paterno's last 20 years, this is kind of what Penn State was, right? They'd have very good teams, but somewhere along the line, they'd slip. Michigan 2005, Iowa 2008, 1994, obviously went undefeated, but still didn't win a national championship. Michigan in 1997 had them in Happy Valley and didn't really show up for that game. Ended up getting blown out. So this is really what Penn State football has kind of been since 1986.
Yep.
I would argue.
Yeah. Go ahead, finish up.
Yeah. I was just going to say, and maybe is James Franklin the guy to get Penn State over the hump? Who knows? But could anybody get Penn State over the hump? I think that's another excellent question, too.
All right, great. So these are good, all good discussions. They might not seem all that much related to the draft, but they really are, because these are all things, you know, Penn State's got two guys going the first round. I made the case last year that, and I'm not 100% certain that this is true, but I thought Penn State had more talent on its roster than Ohio State. I never said that before. I think it was the first time, really. But it was, and it's debatable. But at the very least, Penn State had just as much talent, top to bottom, on the roster as Ohio State. They just didn't have Marvin Harrison Jr. And he's the one who won the game, and ultimately that's what you're judged on. But if you're James Franklin, and you got two guys going in the first round and maybe 10 guys getting drafted, how do we judge that? I mean, even if you don't think Penn State had more talent than Ohio State last year, you have to feel like they had every bit as much talent, with the exception of the receiver spot. So, and the draft to me echoes a lot of that, because Penn State does a tremendous job getting guys ready. This is part of what Franklin's talking about. Teams, you know, other teams would trade with Penn State in a heartbeat. Penn State does a great job getting guys ready for the draft, and we're going to see it this weekend.
Yeah, and I think this is really something that kind of gets used for and against James Franklin, right? It gets used for him that, you know, he hires coaches to develop these players, and they've been very good in the player development department. Not only are they getting, for instance, Micah Parsons when he's a five-star recruit, one of the best in the country, but they're getting him to the point where he could have a star career with the Dallas Cowboys, which certainly he has so far. More recently, talking about this year's draft, Chop Robinson is probably one of Penn State's better player development stories, because when he was at Maryland, they tried to basically make him a linebacker. And that's, as we saw, Chop is at his best when he's on the edge trying to get to the quarterback. And Manny Diaz did a great job of letting Chalk be himself, and Manny Diaz is going to get a lot of the credit, but James Franklin is the one who hired Manny Diaz and really let him do his thing with that defense to great success. But on the flip side of that, someone could say, well, Penn State has these guys, they can develop. What happens on Saturday to where the work that's put in Monday through Friday doesn't lead to a win in the regular season's biggest game? So really with recruiting in general, Franklin's reputation for his detractors is great recruiter, can get players here, here meaning Penn State, but cannot win the way he should given the talent that's on the roster. So yeah, it's something that it's unique in that people who argue for and argue against James Franklin can really use kind of the same points. And the player development at Penn State has been, I would say, it's top notch. But obviously there are a lot of people, none of that matters unless you win the national championship or at least make it to the college football playoff. And that hasn't happened yet for Penn State.
Confidence level in Chop Robinson, then, getting back to the other first round pick. I really like Chop. I think Chop was a really good college player, very disruptive. I don't see stardom for Chop. I see Chop being a good NFL player. I'm fine with him going in the first round, but I also could have seen him dropping to the second round, kind of first few picks like Joey Porter Jr. did last year. I guess for me, it's just, I don't see a dominance. He's very quick, but I don't know that I necessarily see dominant traits from him coming off the edge. A good pro? I can see him being a good pro. I'm not sure that Chop is ever a guy that just lights up the film in the NFL.
I think that's a fair assessment. I think the main concern about Chop obviously is his size. And I think the fear is that he'll be one of those guys that's not quite big enough to play defensive end, but not quite quick enough to play linebacker.
Yeah, very good.
He's plenty quick. He showed that at the NFL Combine. And I think in this era of the NFL, where obviously the edge position has become there's people who will argue that other than quarterback, edge is the most important position you can covet in the NFL draft. I definitely see Chop Robinson having success in the NFL the way Jason now Odafe Owe kind of has. I think that's a decent comparison because he was the guy that was obviously very fast at Penn State, didn't have the stats that people liked him at the college level. I don't think he had a sack in his last year at Penn State, but he's playing with the Ravens now and has ended up having a pretty good pro career. But Owe is known, I think, more for getting pressure on the quarterback than sacking the quarterback. And I think that ties into what you were saying, Corey, to where I don't know if Owe or Chop Robinson is one of the players that just you watch and just absolutely dominates, takes over a game. The Miles Garrett, TJ Watt level, I don't really see him getting to that. That's a high standard to live up to. That's not a knock on Chop. It's just that the edge play in the NFL right now is obviously top notch, and it's kind of easy to get lost in the shadows when you're going against those guys. But yeah, I think there's plenty that he does well. I don't think there's really much reason to not think he'll have success at the NFL level. He's going to what's been a pretty good team over the past few years in Miami, playing for Mike McDaniel. We'll see what they want to do with him in that scheme. But yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think as far as Fashanu and Chop go, I think if things go well for Olu, he could be a guy that's a perennial all-pro, if not in the conversation on a yearly basis. I don't know if Chop gets to that level, but that's okay. I think as long as he could have a solid, lengthy NFL career, that will bode well for the Dolphins. And I think this is a guy that could stick around in the league for a while.
I want to bring up hype here. In 2022, Joey Porter Jr. starts the season with 6 pass breakups against Purdue. Just was spectacular. Gained all kinds of national notoriety. And then basically the entire rest of that season, nobody threw at him. Like, nobody. He's covering wide receiver 1. Nobody really threw at him. So you got Kalen King on the other side guarding wide receiver 2. And I keep mentioning this. We saw this past year with Penn State how you can have a gargantuan drop-off from wide receiver 1 to wide receiver 2. Penn State didn't have a wide receiver 1. And Keandre Lambert-Smith might be a decent number 2, but he ain't a number 1. So my point is, Kalen King is guarding the number 2 wide receiver. They're never, ever throwing the ball the other way. So you know the ball is coming your way all the time. You know you've got help with your safeties because the ball is coming your way all the time. You've got every reason in the world to succeed because you know they're not going the other way. So Kalen King succeeded. Then the hype started. First team All-American. Possible first rounder. I'll contend, Joe, that Kalen King was really never all that good, even in 2022. And I feel bad to say this. I hope it works out for the young man. I think the kid made up his mind a year ago he was turning pro early, no matter what happened during the 2023 season, because he didn't have a good 2023 season. And then he got abused badly by Marvin Harrison Jr. And then his pre-draft stuff was abysmal, as bad as you can possibly imagine. So my theory is, I don't know if it was just hype. Did Kalen King not put in the work? Did he buy into the hype too much? Again, I feel bad. I've never seen a Penn State player go from possibly being a first-round pick to possibly being a sixth-round pick and nobody having any I'll fall back on my theory. I just don't think the guy was really ever very good, and the 2022 was a complete and total mirage.
Yeah, well, I think, Corey, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the competition at Penn State, because if Kalen King wasn't guarding the likes of Marvin Harrison Jr., what kind of test did he have? If that makes sense. Obviously, the Big Ten, it's been down the past few seasons. And not only has it been down, it's never been a league that statistically throws the ball very much. So, going back to 2022, I can't think of really any instances where Kalen King, went against a top-notch receiver or close to top-notch receiver and had that sort of I'm him moment the way Joey Porter did against Purdue. I can't think of one.
He also had a tremendous defensive line in front of him, front 7, which put him in a great spot. So to me, everything around him made Kalen King look good, even when I'm not sure Kalen King was really all that good.
Yeah, and I think, I think the strength of the quarters in the secondary helped the defensive line as well.
And yes, absolutely. No doubt about it. Yep.
But yeah, Kalen King, we just talked about Chomp Robinson being a tweener. I don't necessarily classify Chomp this way, but I think the detractors and the pre-draft write-ups would say that he's too small to play on the end and not quite fast enough to be at linebacker. I think kind of similarly with Kalen King, there's the concern that he didn't show great speed at the NFL combine, and he might not be quick fast enough to excel a quarter in the NFL, but he might not also be big enough to play safety. I think he has some qualities that would make for a good NFL safety. He has always played the run very well, and he has good ball skills, and I think he has a high football IQ, but is his body going to hold up playing in that position against the best receivers, tight ends, what have you, running backs in the world? I don't know. So, I think all in all, Kalen King's Penn State career, when he had a chance to excel in those biggest games, namely what everybody's going to remember is Marvin Harrison Jr. in Ohio State, it just it just didn't work out. And then since the end of the regular season and all the pre-draft stuff, which you mentioned, hasn't really worked out well for him either. So we'll see where he goes. You know, after night one, it's really anybody's guess as to what happens at the draft. Maybe Kalen King goes in the third round. That's the best case. But he could end up going in the sixth round. I was reading actually your article for Nittany Sports Now about Shaka Toney, how he had a very good pre-draft process, and people were saying maybe he could go in the second round. He ended up going all the way in the seventh. So that just kind of goes to show what a crapshoot the draft is after round one, and in the case of the Atlanta Falcons and what they did.
So let's
during round one.
Let's close with that then. What the hell are the Falcons doing? I mean, look, if Penix were 21, you know, I don't know. Cousins has $180 million, $90 million guaranteed. Penix is about to turn 24. Even if he takes over in 4 years, you can be 28 years old. You can make the case, well, yeah, quarterbacks can play till they're 38 or 40. It's so bizarre to me that, like, if it weren't for just complete embarrassment and humiliation for the entire organization, I literally could see the owner firing the general manager like today. Like, there's video of the general manager talking to the owner last night, and the speculation is it's the GM explaining this pick to the owner after spending $180 million on a quarterback.
Yeah, I think Atlanta did kind of the other 31. Well, in this case, would have been 24, I suppose, because of them picking eighth, but they did a lot of the GMs in this league kind of a service by taking the pressure off, and that whatever we pick, it's not going to get panned nationally because Atlanta really took the cake as far as that goes. Yeah, I don't understand it. I'm not too sold on Michael Penix as a prospect to begin with. There's the age, which you mentioned. He's also beat up, right? He had an injury-plagued career at Indiana, and he never really excelled in college football until he went to Washington, where he had a great receiving core, great offensive coordinator, and a head coach who only was tapped to succeed Nick Saban at Alabama. So that's obviously a very good situation. Is Atlanta a great situation? I don't think they would have been picking in the top 10 if that was the case. So that in of itself, I didn't really like, but then adding what they paid Kirk Cousins, I don't know where this ranks as far as draft surprises slash blunders. But as far as surprises go, it's got to be up there. As far as blunders go, we'll kind of see how it all plays out. But yeah, that just didn't make very much sense to me. I'm rooting for Michael Penix. I think he's a great story. He was an exciting guy to watch playing college football, even in Indiana. But yeah, I don't like the pick in that situation, and it's really absurd, given the context of what Atlanta had done.
You're screwing Kirk Cousins here. Now, look, I'm not a Kirk Cousins fan, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's the be all end all, and he's going to be a guaranteed star there, or anything like that. I got major questions about Kirk Cousins as well. You're screwing the guy. You're putting him in an immediate quarterback competition immediately. I mean, that guy has every right. I remember when the Steelers got Mason Rudolph, and Ben Roethlisberger's like, well, it's not my job to teach the guy. Well, and everybody's like, well, that's Ben not being a good teammate. You're screwing Kirk Cousins. You just spent the number 8 pick in the draft on his replacement. He hasn't even taken a snap for you yet. My God, man, I could see Kirk, because now, as soon as Kirk Cousins has one bad game, all the media and everybody's got all this pressure is going to be on putting Penix in the game. Why on earth would you do that to a guy that you just spent a boatload of money on?
Yeah, and I don't know if I go as far to say that Atlanta screwed Michael Penix, but you think about it, this is a guy.
No, they screwed Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, well, they did. They definitely did. But in Penix's case, I'm not going to, you know, sound too sympathetic about a guy that just got taken eighth overall in the NFL draft, but at the same time, his pick has become a national punchline. So I don't know if it was the best situation for him either. And again, we'll see how all this plays out. But as far as Cousins goes, I really did not understand the choice to pay him all of that money. And But if you're going to pay him all that money, you better show faith that he's going to be the guy, at least for a few years. And they obviously showed very little of that by drafting his successor before Cousins even takes a snap.
Crazy.
In Atlanta. So, yeah, it's just the whole thing is a big head scratcher for sure. And whatever else happened in the next 24 picks in the first round, it wasn't going to top that at all.
Crazy stuff in the NFL draft. Good stuff. Joe Smeltzer, Nittany Sports Now. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, thanks as always, Corey.